On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we dig into the latest with the Houston Astros moves they are considering making involving Alex Bregman. We talk about Steve Cohen's comments about the Pete Alonso negotiations, a wild, wild game in the Dominican Winter League, and a little bit more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world willing to switch positions if it means bringing Alex Bregman into the fold. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And I'll do producing if Bregman wants to come back.
Anything to bring back Alex Bregman. Although, Jake, you producing the podcast, I don't think would be as outrageous as Jose Altuve playing left field, since you have actually produced podcasts before. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about the Astros' very strange offseason, the Mets' very interesting offseason, as Steve Cohen said some interesting words in public about Pete Alonso. We are going to talk about the drama of the Dominican Winter League later on, and maybe we'll get to a few other topics, depending on how long we yell about Brett Beatty. But Jake, we must begin with the opener. And that is the Houston Astros. Jake, when we have been planning these pods over the last few weeks, you know, thinking about Bregman and Alonso as these two big, once we got past Roki, it was like, all right, Bregman and Alonso, we got these two Boris clients, two players that mean so much to their teams that seem like they're heading elsewhere in free agency. But as the process has lingered on and certain transactions have been made or not made, it has become a little bit more clear that Alex Bregman going back to Houston is at least on the table. And that concept continued to gain steam over the weekend for a few reasons. The first of which is that the Astros had their Fan Fest. And of course, everybody at Fan Fest was like, hey, so remember Alex Bregman? He's not here. He used to come to these things all the time. What's he up to? Oh, he's still a free agent. Could he potentially be coming back, even though the depth chart would suggest that doesn't make any sense for him to? And Jose Altuve, who has been vocal for a long time now about his desire to have Alex Bregman back, confirmed reports, whispers that he would indeed be willing to move to left field to accommodate the return of Alex Bregman. Let's start there before we get to the Ryan Pressly trade element of this, because this headline, I think, is what grabbed most people's attention. So when you saw the idea that Jose Altuve would move to left field so that, again, Isak Paredes, who they acquired from the Cubs, and Christian Walker, who they signed, would seemingly be addressing the corners. Jose Altuve is second baseman. Paredes could play second base if Bregman returned to play third. And Altuve would move to left field, where he has never played an inning in his life. So what did you think when you saw that headline?
Now we're never going to see a home run Rob at left field at Minute Maid Park.
I was dreaming of it. But we're going to need someone a little bit taller. What did you think?
I mean, it makes sense. Altuve, for months, even before Bregman hit the market, was outspoken about bringing him back. And I would imagine for Altuve, there is an element of Will Smith standing in the empty room, where'd all my friends go? Springer gone, Correa gone, Bregman potentially at the door, Kyle Tucker gone. Like, you get it, right? The Astros are still formidable, but it's a different group of characters now. And I think it is reasonable to believe that Bregman, from like a culture component, is very important to Astrodom. And it makes sense that Altuve would be this outspoken. And like, what does Jose Altuve have to prove at second base, right? It's not, he's still playing at this point because he wants to keep winning championships. The money's in the bank, right? Whatever. And so, like, going to play left field to give the team a better chance to win doesn't necessarily surprise me. What surprises me, right, is the image of him in the outfield, if it does happen, will be really startling, because he's got to be the act active leader for innings played at second base right
now. Oh, yeah. Well, that's one element of it. And I think, right, so let's talk about why it does make sense. You just hit on the first obvious reason, which is that Jose Altuve loves Alex Bregman and he wants to keep winning. And he, as far as he's concerned, Alex Bregman can continue to help him to win.
They're right? better. The team's better yeah, if
their
this
team's
happens.
Better. Right. And also, like, the notion of little Jose Altuve playing left field is goofy because he's never done it. He's never played a second in the outfield. And yes, you could say, oh, well, the short left field in Houston, like, anybody could do that. You know, Yordan Alvarez limping around can do that. I'm sure Jose Altuve, who is still, while about to turn 35, is still relatively spry, right? Like, he can move around even if he's never done that before. Now, in a larger left field, half the other half of the season, it maybe not the best plan, right? Maybe not the best plan. But the other reason it makes sense, if we're saying that this makes sense, because obviously at the start of the offseason, we weren't like, Jose Altuve is going to move to left field. Like, and we were not thinking about this. But okay, the other reason it makes sense is that the Astros outfield is bad. Mm. They do not have a left fielder. With all due respect to our friend Taylor Trammell, who I believe they claimed on waivers at some point and is currently penciled in as their starter on roster resource. They obviously traded Kyle Tucker, which means Chaz McCormick is in one of these corners. McCormick coming off a terrible season. Jake Myers in center field, a great defender. They still have Mauricio Dubon. This is a bad outfield group. And so you can look at it. I can understand looking at it being like, listen, Jose Altuve just figuring it out in left actually makes us better, especially if it means Alex Bregman is coming back. And it is also funny because the other thing that they're saying is, well, we're not going to ask Isak Paredes to play the outfield. Like, clearly they do not view him as a candidate to move to a corner outfield spot more than Altuve, even though he's much younger. But he's also much thicker and has more experience recently playing second base. So you can imagine the moving the pieces around there. And by the way, they still have Yordan, too, who could play the outfield, although Joe Espada has been very vocal saying he does not want Yordan playing as much outfield as he has in recent past. So those are all the reasons it makes sense, right? So let's I think we've covered, because the part of it, because Altuve has been so vocal and because, to your point, like, he just wants to win and he's an awesome teammate and clearly is just like, yeah, I'll do it, in the same way that Mookie's like, yeah, sure, whatever. You need me to play shortstop? Like, whatever. I'm bored doing this right field thing anyway. So sure. Maybe Altuve is like, yeah, that sounds fun. Let's give it a try. Like, whatever. I'm 35. As you mentioned, I have nothing to prove. I might as well give it a chance to keep this lineup together, because yeah, as goofy as the defensive alignment would look, if you do plug Alex Bregman back into this lineup with the additions that they've made, all right. You don't have Kyle Tucker anymore, but you still are looking like a hell of a right-handed group here that would be a pain to deal with. And when you compare it to the rest of the AL West, you know, they still look pretty good.
So weird, though, to think about.
Yeah. No, obviously.
Altuve running around out there.
Yeah. So, but now let's talk about why it doesn't make sense. And let's bring the money component in. And let's bring in the other moves that they made. So
let's review their offseason to this point, right? And I think...
Oh, before the...
Very quickly.
Sure. Sure.
So... Yeah. Understanding the Astros offseason, you really obviously need to go back a handful of years where they make really two disastrous financial decisions. And those are free agent contracts for first baseman Jose Abreu, who they are still paying, and relief pitcher Rafael Montero, who I believe they still employ.
Yeah.
But is...
Yeah, he's still in the organization.
Firmly...
More on him later.
Bad. More on him later. And so that... duo, that combo of moves just clogged up a whole lot of payroll, and both those moves were just straight up made by the owner Jim Crane in the wake of their 2022 World Series title when they did not have a GM
because they fired their GM
because he was fighting with their owner
after winning the World Series. Yeah.
And so that's how we got here, right? And so then you're in a position where the most successful baseball team of the last 10 years doesn't have the payroll flexibility to keep around good players. They trade Kyle Tucker. They bring in Isak Paredes via trade in that deal. They sign Christian Walker to play first base. And when that happens, we assume that the corners are sufficiently clogged, leaving no room for Alex Bregman.
Well, let's also mention that they tried to trade for Nolan Arenado, right?
Yes.
And when Arenado says no, they're like, all right, we're moving on. We're going to do this other sequence and end up with the Paredes Walker corners. It's so funny, though, you mentioned the payroll flexibility part of it, because it was the owner, it was Jim Crane driving the bus to get out, to get Abreu, to get Montero, you know, to bring Montero back, right? He had already been there, to bring in Jose Abreu. And when we say the flexibility,
we got to find the guy who did this.
And it's like, part of that is because they want to get back under the CBT, the first luxury tax, right? Because historically, the Astros have been, I mean, they've done it before, but they have been unwilling to do that. And going into this offseason and where we're at now after Walker and all these moves, before this weekend, they were still a few million dollars over that first line. That first, friends, let's be real, the way that some of these owners are viewing as a cap, right? This is, they're saying, we do not want to go over this number. And in recent weeks, they have determined that our way to get under that number would be to trade Ryan Pressly. Another large contract for a player who has been around for a long time, has been one of the most important players of this Astros run by far. One of the best pitchers in postseason history. That's a fact. I mean, he has been that. But he was also making, you know, $14 million, and he was the contract that they felt most comfortable moving, partially because other teams would want it, and partially because Ryan Pressly got a lot worse this past year. And they already obviously committed big money to Josh Hader. Brian Abreu remains very good. And they viewed Pressly as expendable at this point. And if they viewed that they could get off of his money, they were like, great, we'll do this. And that is reflected in the fact that they traded him to the Cubs over the weekend for an A-ball pitching prospect, Juan Bello, who seems he's fine. But, I mean, they were getting off this money. And while they did send $5 million to cover some of the $14 million he has remaining just from the last year of his contract, this was a move to get under that line, that $241 million line. Okay, so they did that successfully. They traded Ryan Pressly, and we can talk about him more with the Cubs in a second. But if you're bringing back Alex Bregman, you're going over the line again, obviously, right? I mean, there's really no other contracts that you could move to where you could still bring back Alex Bregman on whatever creative contract you're willing to do and be over. And the reporting from Chandler Rome and others on the Astros says, okay, the Astros are willing to go over it for the right situation. And it seems that Bregman would be the right situation. However, as we just described, that is a very strange situation and kind of an unbelievable outcome when you consider the start of the offseason, where this is not like Pete Alonso, where it's like, who's going to sign Pete Alonso? There are plenty of teams where it's like, yes, Alex Bregman would make them so much better. Just give him the money. In this case, it's somehow him finding his way back to Houston would really be an astonishing result.
I really want to harp on the Abreu and Montero contracts one more time.
It's bad, folks.
Because it is a total of $30 million worth of payroll. That's plus the Pressly trip. Like, that's Alex Bregman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, that's it. Like, that's Alex Bregman. And so it is the consequences of my actions. Oh, no, here they are.
Yeah.
You know?
And two, you know, the Tucker one is a little bit of a different conversation. Because if they decided the numbers could be so high, and like they clearly used it as like, okay, well, we can get, not only can we get a player that can help us this year in Isak Paredes, but he has enough value that he can get us a recent first round pick in Cam Smith and Hayden Wesneski, who will pitch for them this year. But we also had, when we talked about the Astros at the start of the offseason, we kind of said like, you do have to pick one. You can't let both of these guys go. And so now that we've maybe find our way back to a situation where they are somehow picking Bregman, even with this convoluted situation, is kind of amazing. The one thing that's at the back of my head about this situation, too, that has not really been acknowledged, is like Isak Paredes. Like, I still don't really know how good he is. And I know he was an all-star last year, and I know I shouldn't be clouded by how bad he was in the second half with the Cubs. And he looks like a perfect fit in that ballpark. But there's other part of me that's just like, okay, but like maybe Isak Paredes is, I mean, clearly they traded for him, but I don't know. That's another thing where it's like, well, maybe he's not as important as we think, but I don't know.
I think they should sign Bregman and move Altuve to left, because the likelihood of one of the following things happening is pretty high. Altuve gets hurt. Bregman gets hurt. Paredes gets hurt. Christian Walker gets hurt. Okay? Like one of those four guys, or Jordan, right? One of those guys missing enough time where you can reshuffle the positional alignment and just put Altuve back at second base and DH Walker, whatever, right? Or Paredes, or like Isak Paredes stinks And then you could just put everybody back where they belong. Like, I think one of those things will happen because baseball is random. And you just want to have as many good, competent, dependable baseball players on your team. And the positional alignment will kind of figure itself out in the end. And so I think they absolutely should sign Alex Bregman. And from a narrative perspective, I'm fascinated because the Astros had, when they traded for Paredes and signed Walker, we all were like, okay, it's done. Thanks for the memes, Alex Bregman. And Astros fans were understandably frustrated. But then like over the last couple weeks and months since then, and Bregman has remained on the market, and we get to Astros Jamboree, and fans have found a reason to hope again that they will get Alex Bregman, where now, if he ends up on the Tigers or the Red Sox or the Marlins,
Marlins.
Fans will be like, you pull me back in. Right.
And again, the contrast of that with Pete, who we'll talk about in our second segment, is also wild in terms of the fan sentiment and whether he feels like he should come back or what the feeling is with what the players. Is the player asking too much or whatever? Obviously, Scott Boras being both of their agents makes this all the more interesting. So I think we can kind of cut it off here.
I love the Astros stuff. Dude. Yeah, I love the Astros right now because it is maintaining that level of success for as long as they have is unbelievable. It is one of the most impressive accomplishments in baseball roster construction in the 21st century, easily, right? To be that good for that long is outrageous. They have made it so much harder for themselves than they needed to, right? If Jim Crane had just like swallowed his pride and let James Click continue being the general manager after winning the World Series, they wouldn't have Abreu or Montero and might still have Kyle Tucker. And like, they have upped the difficulty level for themselves. And the farm system sucks, right? And it's like all these things, and yet they keep winning. I know that they got their streak of ALCSs ended last year because the Tigers were impenetrable. They still made the playoffs, right? Like, they still won the division.
Still
the
came back and won the division after that horrible start. And then that's the thing, right? To me, as much as we get tired of the same team getting there, it's like, they've now done it in a few different ways, and this upcoming season will be a very different way if they are going to do it again.
If the Astros bring back Bregman, would you pick them to win the AL West?
I mean, I'm probably picking them anyway.
Bingo. That is exactly my point.
So you know that. I mean, you know I'm picking Houston anyway. But but like I said, it is a very strange roster composition, but that's fine. Now that Presley, last note on this before we take a break. So Presley's gone now. And we'll finish with him on the Cubs in a second. You know, the Astros bullpen, we talked after they got Hader. It was like, oh my gosh, Hader or Bray, Presley doesn't get better than this. And then there was a lot of bullpens better than that. It was not working out super well. Eventually it settled in. It was like, okay, this is pretty good. And then once Hader and Abreu kind of settled down, you had just this new wave of totally anonymous pitchers. I mean, we're talking guys that I had never heard of Brian King before he was in the major leagues. That there's not a lot of those in this league, and he was one.
Hard
of them.
To do now.
Never heard of him. Taylor Scott had been bouncing around. He had a great season. Caleb Ort bouncing around, same thing. Rafael Montero is still in this organization and is, of course, making more money than all of these other guys. What I'm most curious about this Astros bullpen is if any of these starting pitchers who are coming back or starting pitchers that have recently come up, if any of those settle back into a relief role, whether that is a Wesneski, whether that is, you know, Lance McCullers. Remember him? He hasn't pitched in 2 years. Like, does he, you know, kind of transition into sort of a reliever role? Forrest Whitley, right? The top prospect 27 years ago. He's still bouncing around, made his debut finally last year. So how this Astros bullpen kind of comes together will be interesting, but Hader and Abreu is still about as good as you're going to want. And so obviously getting rid of Presley is not that hard for them, which brings us to our final note about this, which is just Ryan Presley. Amazing career, as I mentioned. Unbelievable postseason track record, but he kind of checks all the boxes of like, well, this is going in the wrong direction. Velo's going down, strikeouts are going down, like OPS against is going up, like everything you would see in a reliever. Normally, relievers fluctuate in very wild ways. Presley's been rock solid, and now he's just getting worse. So the Cubs are clearly bringing him in to be the closer. Part of why he reportedly wanted to accept this deal was because he remember when they brought in Hader, it was like, you're going to take this job away from Ryan Preston. Like, he wants to be the closer. The Cubs could use a closer, so he'll be that. How much of an upgrade is he really? I know they didn't really pay a huge cost for him, but remember, they were going after Tanner Scott, and so this is a cheaper, but in some ways riskier alternative. I could also see Presley being awesome because he's been good enough to where I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, has a 3 ERA again, but there are signs here where he's just getting a lot worse. So I think he makes the Cubs bullpen better, but I'm curious if he ends up back in the seventh or eighth inning anyway at some point.
He's a 36-year-old reliever.
Yeah, that's there's a few of those still that's out it. There that they could have signed, and I guess they decided to trade one day, for Ryan Presley.
I shouldn't hate, though, Jordan, because, you know, one day I, too, will become a 36-year-old reliever. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about Pete Alonso again. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I have an admission. We're talking about Pete Alonso. I watched both of the football games yesterday because wow. I am a cultured man.
Can you believe who won the second game?
I can believe. On the way to the game, I'm in Florida right now with some buddies who follow football. They asked me to name as many players as I could participating in the AFC and NFC championship games. Mm-hmm. And I got to 18 total, which can I was impressed by.
Can I say something? Because this is our podcast, and it's like, all right, I'm just going to be, while you're leading me down this road. I was watching Bills Chiefs, and they kept talking about this player named Christian Benford, who I believe was like injured. And I was like, oh, like Christian Benford, the minor Christian league Benford. Pitcher for the Royals that nobody has ever heard of except my friend Jake Mintz.
Yeah.
Like, I would be shocked if there are people listening to this podcast who know who Christian Benford is.
He was from Mechanicsburg, wasn't he?
Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania. Why are we bringing this up? But again, I was watching. I was like, oh, like Christian Benford.
And Jordan, for me, you know, do we need a salary cap in football? Another one? How are people not mad about having the same teams win all the time?
No, they are. But my takeaway is, let's get rid of the salary cap so that Patrick Mahomes can keep winning. I don't know. Anyway. All right. No more football talk. You can look up Christian Benford's baseball reference page and be like, why do you guys know who this person is? In fact, there you go. That's a challenge for you listeners.
Yeah.
Try and figure out why we know who Christian Benford is. Like, what would be the connection there? If and you can figure that out, that would be awesome. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com.
Apologies to all Bills fans out there, particularly my favorite Bills fan, Jesse Winker.
Oh, my dude. All right. Well, we'll talk about Jesse Winker here in a second as we transition to the New York Mets. And now it is time for a new segment called Kind of a Big Deal.
Steve Cohen in the financial world is definitely kind of a big deal.
He is definitely a big deal. However, in this segment, we are going to try and determine whether what happened over the weekend is a big deal or not. Because the Mets hosted their version of Fan Fest. They all have different names. I believe this was called Amazing Day? Amazing something? No G. No G. Right. Wouldn't even think about having a G at the end of that word. And Mets fans were feeling good. Signed Juan Soto. Juan Soto was not there. Unfortunately, his flight was canceled from the Dominican Republic. There was a tweet that was like, Juan Soto, Oscar Brazoban, and Deadneil Nunez will be unable to attend. Oh. I was like, damn it. Brazoban, out. Fans are going to be devastated. Hey, Brazoban did more for the Mets last year than Juan Soto did. Anyway, Juan Soto was not there. But Juan Soto was, of course, referenced many times. And they also hosted a little Q&A sesh with David Stearns, with Carlos Mendoza, with Steve Cohen himself. And as part of this session, at the beginning and throughout, there were chants from the fans. We want Pete. We want Pete. We want Pete. And, you know, they kind of awkwardly laughed. There's kind of been versions of this before. Although this is interesting. I don't know if this exact same thing happened at the Astros. I don't know if Dana Brown did. I'm pretty sure Jim Crane did do a Q&A. But anyway, the point is the Mets, they're like, all right, we're out there. We know Steve Cohen has no problem getting in front of cameras and talking to the fans, which again, that's part of why I think people appreciate and respect him. However, Steve Cohen, in response to this, just to kind of acknowledge it, and in an extreme, you know, display of honesty and transparency in something that normally we don't see, because what do you normally hear when you ask people who are in charge of baseball teams about free agent negotiations?
I can't talk about that.
David Stearns has been saying all winter, we like Pete. We've always said we like Pete. You know, we're going to keep doing that. We're going to explore all these options, blah, 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 blah. Steve Cohen's like, I'm not going to do that because I'm Steve Cohen. I'm in charge. So I'm going to tell you exactly what is happening, which basically he said, I don't like this. I don't like the negotiations. This is worse than Juan Soto, he said half jokingly. Seriously, I don't know. He said he did not like the structures of the contracts being presented to him. He basically said this has been exhausting. And while we're still considering it, that's where I'm at.
Is this a big deal? Kind of. Here's why.
Kind of a hedge. Go ahead.
You know who loves a hedge? Steve Cohen. That Steve Cohen is exhausted by negotiating with Scott Boras is not surprising, nor should it be surprising to anyone involved. As someone who has never negotiated with Scott Boras, I am not speaking from experience. However, it is probably exhausting. However, such is the game you have chosen to play, Steve. If you want to own a baseball team and spend oodles of money on that team, you cannot be floored when the most powerful agent in the sport is demanding a large number for his skilled client. That is not a big deal, right? Like, what he actually said does not surprise me. That he said it at all might be a big deal. Because Ken Rosenthal wrote about this morning at The Athletic, like, it could turn into a grievance because you're sharing information that could alter the value of the free agent and impact the negotiations itself. That is a big no-no. It is called, I think, attachment 49, and thou shalt not chat about Pete Alonso at Amazing Day. I don't think, here's why this is actually not a big deal. It will not meaningfully skew the odds of Pete Alonso returning to the New York Mets or not.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think, again, I mean, some of these specific things that he was saying, what I'm so interested about this is not necessarily what we learn about the negotiations from it, as much as Steve Cohen's unique attempts and often successes to turn to through PR, through what he's saying, which in a lot of cases, I do believe he is being honest, to turn the public sentiment in his favor. Because again, as we've talked about a lot, like fan sentiment being versus with players versus not players, like obviously there are a lot of Mets fans who, the ones that are saying we want Pete, says, Steve Cohen, you're one of the richest people in the world, just bring our favorite player back. That's a lot of fans. But then there's also a sentiment that's just like, oh, Pete's being greedy. He shouldn't be expecting to get $300 million. Like, come on, dude, just like come back to the Mets and stop being a hard. It's like, that's also unreasonable and misses the point of free agency. Hello. And of course, they acknowledge that too, right? Like David Stern says that. They all say this. They say, listen, he earned the right to go out and get as much as he can. And as our good friend and former producer Bobby Wagner points out, he had a couple tweets about this. Like, the system is set up so that you get to pay really good players nothing for a long time. And then when they get to free agency, this is when you pay them. That's the game you're in, Steve Cohen. You should know that. You understand that. And you're willing. You clearly are willing and capable. Now, as people have pointed out to us, and after we had our first Pete Alonso conversation last week, like, I think it wasn't that we thought, like, they're obligated to give in to whatever Scott Boras is asking. Like, yes, it is a negotiation. I totally acknowledge that. But the tone where, you know, Steve Cohen says things along the lines of, Reality is we're moving forward as we continue to bring in players. The reality is it becomes harder to feed Pete into what is a very expensive group of players that we have.
Not true. Not true.
it's like, no, because this brings me back to the other part about this when we're talking about the depth chart. We're, you know, when you talk about the Bregman situation, it's like, well, yeah, you can realistically look at it and say, where does Bregman fit? With Pete, I still don't really understand what the plan is at first and or third base. Okay, you move Vientos there and you're rolling with Brett Beatty. David Stern says you got to trust, you got to play these younger players. I mean, you can do that. And if we zoom out and we look at how much better the Mets get this offseason, you can still say they got better even if they lose Pete. But it's just not as obvious. You didn't go out and actually do something about it, you know? And so until that happens, it makes me think like, all right, well, I'm sorry, Steve Cohen. I don't want to hear you complaining that you have an expensive group of players that you need to feed Alonso into. Like, that does not ring. That doesn't mean anything to me. And it goes back to the same thing. Like, I have I struggle to analyze anything related to where the ceiling is or what is too expensive for Steve Cohen, because he's just blasted past that in a ways that we haven't seen any other owner do.
But then that raises an interesting question. And I'm not trying to defend Cohen here. Why this? Why has Cohen decided to choose this battle to draw a line in the sand? He was willing to dramatically overpay Frankie Montas, right? What did they give him, 236?
Yeah, there's other versions of it, right.
Like he will pay a pretty dollar for things that he thinks are worth it, for things that David Stern says are worth it, right? And for whatever reason, Alonso so far has not met that threshold. Now, I raised this idea to you, I think, by text. Is this just Cohen drawing a line in the sand and saying, I will invest great sums of money in my team, but I will not be taken advantage of? I am not a piggy bank. Do not try and swindle me. I'm a business boy. I know what I'm doing. Maybe. But he's going to have to continue to negotiate with Scott Boras. He's already signed two deals. Three deals with Boras this winter?
Yeah. Yeah.
With Minaya
and
Soto.
And Montas.
Yeah. Like, it's not as if he hasn't had to talk to Scott on the phone.
Right.
Right? So there's clearly some sort of meaningful, productive working arrangement. So something has to be going on here that is to me. Because it's not like Steve Cohen just rolled out of bed and was like, I'm going to be a hard ass about the Pete Alonso one.
Yeah.
So that fascinates me.
I think he's being honest. I think what it is, very bluntly, is Pete Alonso is the kind of player. Now, we defended his merits as a player that you should want on your team last week, and I could do it again now, but it's more about that Scott Boras is like, this is one of the best first baseman free agents we've ever seen, and he deserves a 5-6 year deal of a lot of money, and they have no interest in a deal of that length. I still go back to the same thing where it's just like, wow, the fact that they turned down an extension that they did, the fact that the Mets were willing to give him that extension at the time when Steve Cohen was in charge, David Stearns was in charge, like that, you know, what changed then? To me, that tells me that they viewed his 2024 as like a meaningful step back and like a trend in the direction that they think, oh, he's getting so much worse. I personally don't agree with that. Like, I understand that he struck out more and it was technically his worst season of his career, but that's still a player that I would want to have on my team. But
the deal, whatever,
there's a gap. There's a difference.
This is June of 2023.
Yep.
7 years, $158 million. And now the Mets' best offer was like $370 million. You know?
So that tells me that they think he's gotten a lot worse since then.
And I disagree with that. But no one knows better than the Mets. Organization has more information about how good Pete Alonso will continue to be than the New York Mets.
100%. So all that is to say, I continue to be intrigued by this Mets offseason, because again, when we were talking about Pete and whether they should, like, there were a lot of first basemen out there that they could have done, or third basemen out there that they could have done. And I guess they still sort of are out there. But I'm just really intrigued as you look at this Mets offseason in totality. If you're swapping in Juan Soto for Pete Alonso, that's an upgrade, right? And you look, okay, Jose Siri for Harrison Bader is kind of similar thing. You've replaced Luis Severino and Jose Quintana with Frankie Montas and Clay Holmes, which is like interesting. Sure. Like, okay, sure. You've kept Sean Manaea and Jesse Winker. AJ Minter makes your bullpen better. So it's like, okay, you got better. Like, Juan Soto's amazing, and that's good. But I guess I'm looking at this as like, okay, so let's say you refuse to compete. Like, is there another move here that I'm not seeing where I'm like, hell yeah, what an offseason? Like, obviously getting Juan Soto is a huge win, but I'm struggling to see what that is. So maybe we're wrong and Brett Beatty's going to be awesome and Mark Vientos is going to be even better and all those things. That's all possible. But that's where I'm at with this Mets offseason. Is like, all right, like, that's fine. If you want to draw the line in the sand, say we have a lot of expensive players, we can't fit Pete in with whatever, like, that's fine. Is there something else that I'm missing? Is there still another move where I can be like, all right, good, Mets, yes, World Series contender for sure. Because right now they look like a good team, but I'm still a little bit like, it's not quite as, you know, going for it as you would maybe associate with you know, giving one player $800 million. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Mets. But it is interesting. Is it? Do I think it's a big deal? I think it's closer to not a big deal. I think it's more of just transparency, that unique transparency. But it does also make me think like, oh no, we're whereas maybe the Bregman thing is moving closer to a resolution. I don't think an answer for Pete is coming really anytime soon. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe you're listening to this and you just saw that he signed, you know, with the Angels. But as we kind of saw, like, this one could drag on. Like, Boris is not obviously afraid to take these guys into February, into March. So we'll see.
Pitchers and catchers will report with Pete Alonso as a free agent. You heard it here first. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will uncork a bat. Maybe. Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. The Dominican Winter League, one of our favorite baseball things, is doing its World Series right now. It's called the Finals. It is 7 games. Used to be 9.
I think it was actually supposed to be 9 again, but they need to wrap it up so that the winner can go to the Caribbean Series. So
amazing.
Anyway, best of 7.
Last night.
Yes.
Game 6 between Licey. They wear blue. You've seen videos.
Tigres de Licey.
The Tigers. Against Leones del Escogido. The Lions.
Yes.
Okay. They wear red and black. Game 6, Escogido needs a win and they win the whole thing. Players you've heard of on their team include Gene Segura, Johnny Cueto, and Junior Caminero. Okay. Like real boys.
Junior Lake.
Licey's team a little bit more anonymous, led, of course, by Emilio Bonifacio, the Derek Jeter of the Dominican Winter League. Cesar Valdez. Pitching for them. Wander Suero.
Yes. Wander Suero. My guy, Wander Suero. Licey, the most successful franchise in the league's history. They have won each of the last 2 Lidome titles. So they're going they're going for the three-peat. And the three-peat has happened in Lidome before, but not in like 20 years. So they're going for the three-peat, but they're down 3-2 in this series. And not only are they down 3-2 in the series, they are down to their final out in the bottom of the 9th. Sorry, top of the 9th with Rafael Montero. We told you he'd be back on this podcast on the mound for Escogido, trying to close it out for a win. What else is important about Escogido? They're managed by Albert Pujols, folks. Mm. Albert Pujols is managing. This is the first time he's being a manager, obviously. Duh. Yadier Molina was also managing in this league. This was not the first time he had managed, but he was managing Aguilas. They did not make it to the finals, but the point is, I talked about this team earlier on this podcast because they had gotten off to an amazing start. Pujols' first season was amazing. They were like 10-2. They were dominating. And then they lost just like 17 of 20 and they almost missed the playoffs. But they managed to get in. They get into the championship series. And now they are one strike away or one out away?
One out.
One out away from winning it all.
Winning the whole thing.
Winning it all. They would have been their first championship for Escogido in 10 years. And then what happened?
Nah.
Nope.
Gustavo Nunez, who has spent a lot of time in the minor leagues, but I don't think ever made the big leagues.
Never made it. He spent, I think, over 900 games in the minors. Never made it. He was with the Tigers mostly. Hasn't been in affiliated ball since 2017. He's 36 years old.
He affiliates a baseball over the right field fence to tie the game, barely. 4-4, pandemonium, chaos, bedlam, mayhem, whatever you want to say. We're going to extras, probably. Okay, we're going to the bottom of the ninth, tied at least. And then, a weird stoppage of play. There is a discussion behind home plate with the umpires and Albert Pujols. And you're like, what's going on here? Jordan, what was going on there?
Albert Pujols was saying, check that bat.
Check the bat.
Check the bat.
Check the bat.
They run, the umpire sprints off the field with the bat.
Sprints. And
at this point,
faster than Albert Pujols has run in the last 10 years.
The bat disappears.
Gone.
The game resumes. The game goes into extra innings.
Goes on forever. Lise wins.
Lise wins in extras in 13 innings. They ultimately win. They force a game seven. And then it's like,
what happened to that bat?
What happened to that bat? As of the recording time, which is 9:30 a.m. Eastern, we still don't really know what happened with the bat. They are apparently checking
10:30 Santo Domingo time.
10:30 Santo Domingo time. They're apparently going to check the bat on Monday morning before game seven. And I guess determine whether there was messy stuff. Now, Gustavo Nunez, after the game, was like, yeah, check it. He's like, hey, Albert, send me more bats. You took my bat. So I'm assuming that this will be like, all right, yeah, we're fine. We're playing game seven. But this is, I guess, could be kind of messy. Now, either way.
There's a history of corked bat malfeasance down
for
there.
For sure. It's happened. But you know, obviously, not the best look for Albert. Love the guy.
Why?
Right?
Disagree. Totally
disagree.
You're
just saying, check it. Check, no matter what.
Who cares?
Yeah.
If you've got any suspicion that thing's got a...
Right.
Cork
Gustavo Nunez, not known. I guess you probably haven't heard. Like, not known for his power, right? This isn't like a, you know, Aristides Aquino also on this team. I said, if Aquino homers, are you checking his bat?
No.
Probably. You're probably not as quick. You're probably not getting out there as hastily. Anyway, point is, let's assume bat's fine. Drama aside, that is very entertaining. Game seven, Monday night. You can watch on MLB TV. Johnny Cueto wearing number 100, jersey number 100 he's been wearing this year, against Rodimus Liz. If you don't remember, Rodimus Liz, former Oriole, made it back with the Pirates. He's 41 years old. I believe he is slated to start for Lise.
Rematch of game three.
And I feel so lucky because I missed some of these games, some of the good games earlier in the series when I was on vacation, and last night made up for it. Oh my gosh. This was just, and by the way, the other really cool thing about the series, last thing on this, is they share a home stadium. So in Santo Domingo, the main stadium there, both of these teams are their home park. So there's no travel. They've obviously alternated as the home team, and I guess Lise will be the home team tonight in game seven. But it's just the fans are obviously,
the park is split. That's the best thing.
It's just perfectly split. Yeah.
It's a neutral, it's like a neutral site.
It's perfectly split. And again, I mean, I was readying up my, you know, oh my God, Albert Pujols won the Lidome title tweets. And now, I mean, this is the thing of it. This is the last thing I'll say about Albert. And then we can wrap up here. A lot of criticism of some of his managerial decisions during this Lidome season. But what a year of experience, right? I mean, to have a season where not only is he getting the in-game reps, but like to be the best team in the league and then to lose 17 of 20 and then to sneak into the postseason and then rally back, get into it, and then to be one out away and then blow it and then like all these things. I mean, he is cramming in like a lifetime of managerial experience into this one season. What does that mean for him managing a big league team in the future? I don't know. But it's an amazing thing. He's one of the greatest players of all time, and that he's down there, you know, grinding in this situation is pretty astonishing. And I don't know when we would ever see him in a major league dugout. I'm curious if he'll do anything this upcoming season. Obviously, he's been very focused on Escogido. But either way, it is a really fun story that I'm excited to learn more about.
I also want to give some very quick shout out to his opposing manager.
Yes.
The manager of Lise, Gilbert Gomez, friend of the show.
What a contrast.
Who I don't believe even played minor league baseball?
No, he did. He was an outfielder, and I don't think he got. He didn't even get to. He got to Double A. He played Double A with the Mets, but obviously it's a very big contrast.
He's 32, I believe.
Yeah, 32. Yep.
Was the manager of the Brooklyn Cyclones in the Mets org this past season, right? He's just like in Brooklyn managing a team in high A against like the freaking Aberdeen Ironbirds. Okay. And then he's going toe to toe in game 7 with Albert Pujols. Like, he was the manager last year when they won the whole thing. Like, he's been there. But it's just an unbelievable contrast to see like the future Hall of Famer and Gilbert Gomez,
But also, like, Gilbert Gomez, who's like considered this like rising star of a manager, who's already accomplished more than Albert ever has as a manager. But the contrast is amazing. So anyway, so
Tune in tonight.
That's our Lido. Yes, if you have MLB TV, I mean, it's worth it to even just buy the package just to watch this. And apparently, the Caribbean series is going to be on MLB Network.
Great.
So the champions of all the winter leagues will play. I believe it's in Mexico this year, so that'll be happening. And I guess probably that's honestly probably already starting like later this week. So more baseball keeps us warm all the way through when spring training begins. But maybe game 7 will suck, but it's just great. Again, we've had a few of them the last few years.
Listen,
a game 7 in January, guys. Come on. Yeah, come on.
It's January 27th. It's January 27th and you can watch a game 7. That's it. That's the selling point.
I have one more thing just quickly and then we'll say goodbye. I just wanted to mention, because there was one other transaction, the Nationals signed left-handed pitcher Shinosuke Ogasawara. Now, this is significant not because Ogasawara is going to, you know, throw 200 innings and be an all-star, although that'd be really cool if he was. The Nationals have never signed a player out of NPB. It has never happened. And Ogasawara, who I believe is only like 27, has been one of the better starting pitchers in Japan for a while. 2 years ago, he was like a top 5, top 10 pitcher in NPB. He hasn't been as good recently. It's a 2-year, $3.5 million deal. So you can imagine why this isn't exactly grabbing the headlines. But to see the Nationals end up with a guy here who, based on him having talked about this, our good friend Yuri Karasawa, who tweeted about this at his, of course, amazing NPB resource, Yaku Cosmopolitan, apparently he wanted to sign with the Nats because he viewed them as a place where he could start and like win a rotation spot, which I mean, okay. I'm excited to see him do that, because we looked at this Nationals rotation and it's like, all right, like there are a lot of guys that are really competing here. They brought back Trevor Williams. They still have Mackenzie Gore, very left-handed. They still have Mitchell Parker and DJ Hers and all these guys. So I'm curious to see if he makes it happen, but it's also just nice to see different teams signing Japanese players, including one that has literally never done it before.
It's also an interesting sign of a trend, which is less heralded Japanese players making the leap. If you look at the Japanese players in the big leagues, it's mostly like
super duper stars.
Or players that were supposed to be impact players who may be disappointed or have gotten older or whatever. Like, there's not a lot of, you know, 5-starter
right
types.
Right.
And long relievers coming over from Japan, because in the past that the calculus wasn't worth it. Right. Like, why come over and be that when you could be the 7th best player in the league over there? Now, we're seeing the scales tip a little bit. And part of that is because of all the success various players are starting to have over here. So just keep an eye on this. I mean, is he going to win the Nats World Series? No. But what's going to happen eventually is a player who is not getting headlines, who signs for $3.5 million, is going to make the jump and become a monster. And be way better than we think. Yep. And it's going to be a huge deal, because that'll then incentivize more players like that to come from NPB. I think we are heading to a situation where MLB and NPB are going to have to renegotiate the agreement within the next 10 years. If players like this find success over here, because the Japanese league needs to find a way for their own interests to keep their best players around while still allowing free agency to occur. So I'm just something to keep an eye on. That's all.
100%. And the Phillies also signed a side-arming righty, Koyo Aoyagi, That was a minor league deal, but that's another one the Phillies have never signed a player from MPB. So, I mean, him making the Phillies seems way less likely than Ogasawara making the Nationals. But either way, seeing some of these players, we've already talked about some of the amateur players that are taking different paths out of Japan. So, again, Japan, it's not getting any less relevant, folks. Like, this will continue to be one of the biggest parts of our baseball watching experience, is how our league, you know, interacts with Japanese baseball and Japanese players. So I'm excited to see what happens next.
I don't think that Japanese players are getting meaningfully better compared to American players. I think the skill has been there for a long time. Mm. It is merely the cultural attitude over there about coming to MLB has shifted.
Yeah.
Right. The eighth best player in the NPB in 2004 could have probably have made the leap and been a contributor.
Right.
It's just they weren't acceptable. There was no path.
There have been a lot of players, right? The Yuki Yanagidas and like super duper stars who are now in their mid 30s that just never considered coming over. And so there's just going to be fewer of those. But anyway, so keep an eye on that. Congrats to the Nats on doing something you've never done before. So that is cool. That's it. We're done. We did a baseball podcast. Thank you all for listening. I enjoyed this episode. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for making this show possible. Thank you, Jake Mintz. And you can email us at baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. We really appreciate all the emails. We're getting a lot of really good, helpful feedback. And also just, it's nice to hear from you folks. So thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you all later this week.